Resorts World Catskills, where luxury and excitement are so close by. Catch all the sports action and so much more at Resorts World Catskills. Dial *RWCAT to learn more.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.
Memorial Day weekend, so you're probably on the road. I'll be on the road later. Of course, the only fool that agrees to his son playing in a baseball tournament on Long Island on Memorial Day weekend. So I got to do the show, get him ready, get out to the island, bring my little one with me, and then we go back home late tonight. But that's my issue, not yours. Your issue is that you're probably sitting in traffic on your way to wherever you're going, and at least you get a little bit of time to spend with me this morning, and then Anita comes your way at 12 o'clock. All the staples are in place today. Stump Rothenberg at 10:30. RJ Bell, 11 o'clock. We'll be all over the place because there's not one thing that's unbelievably pressing, but we'll be all over the place. We'll get into a little NFL. The Giants, the Jets, certainly. I guess the Jets are now making this formal. They're starting to send out requests for some personnel guys for future GM candidates. We know Joe Douglas is one of those guys. What I've heard, and we're not going to get into this a lot now, we'll do it probably in the 10 o'clock hour, is that, and this makes sense, is this an attractive job? Look what they just did to Maccagnan. Look at the state of what this team is in right now. Look at the unknown as far as Adam Gase is concerned. And let's be honest. This team is put together. It's not like a GM comes in here now and has a lot of money to spend or a draft to run. So I don't know how enticing this is, but I'll certainly update you on that as we get along. Giants, we'll get to the Giants. The Knicks, the NBA, Kawhi Leonard. I said this yesterday on the show with Rick and Chris, and I think you could make the argument that right now, Kawhi Leonard is the best basketball player in the world. I do. You say, well, look, Kevin Durant. And I get it with Kevin Durant. And maybe this is unfair. But if you take Durant off Golden State, they're still winning an NBA championship. Or they're going to compete for an NBA championship. They haven't lost since he's gone out. They're 6-0. 6-0! They're better with him, of course. But record-wise, they're better without him. He went down 2-2 in that series against Houston. They win that game. They win game 6. They sweep Portland. So we'll certainly get into the NBA as we move along today as well. But, and as nicely as I and Rick and Chris have spoken about the Mets this week, I mean, are you kidding me last night? I mean, really? Are you kidding me with Noah Syndergaard coming out and just, I mean, soiling himself last night? This is the Tigers. There are three teams in baseball. There are two teams in baseball you look at, you're like, oh God. And that's Miami. And that's Baltimore. And then there's teams you look at, you're like, okay, we'll beat them because that team is awful. And Detroit is in company with that. And Noah Syndergaard, and God bless him. Because Noah Syndergaard, when Jacob deGrom is looking to get paid, is the first guy. The first guy. You got to pay him. He needs his money. It's unfair. Well, you know what? Shh. How about this? How about you go out and you retire a vaunted lineup like the Detroit Tigers? How about that? Instead of sitting here, and we are not 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 1 month. We're 2 months into the season. 2 months into the season. This guy's ERA is 5. 5! You're down 2-0 before you even turn on the television. You're down 1-0 before they even collect an out. 2-0 before you even sit in your chair and have your beer open. And the Mets actually scoring runs nowadays, so you don't think that you're dead. And then some guy you never heard of connects on a long home run to make it 4-0. Jacoby Jones. I think there used to be a Jacoby Jones. I don't think this is that same guy. This is the Jacoby Jones that's hitting 183 on the year. 183 on the year. That Jacoby Jones. So Noah Syndergaard, all in last night, goes 5 1/3, 10 hits, 6 runs, all earned. Walks but one, so has good command of his stuff, good control. 9 strikeouts, 104 pitches. ERA, 4.93. I'm sorry. This is completely unacceptable. There's no two ways about it. You've won four in a row. You know that you're without Nimmo, Conforto, who sounds like he'll be back sooner rather than later, Cano, McNeil. I mean, you have a mesh unit out there with Rajai Davis and signing Matt Kemp and Carlos Gomez. You have to put it on your shoulders and make a statement of, this. You know, we've won four in a row. We have an awful team coming into town. I'm going up against a guy that no one's ever heard of, and it's Soto, and I get out-dueled? You got to be kidding me. And to make matters worse, the Mets fought back and took a lead and made it 5-4. Gives it right up 5-5. Made it 6-5. Gives it right up 6-6. Just a horrendous outing from Noah Syndergaard. Let's hear from, and I refuse to call him that superhero nickname because he doesn't earn it. He doesn't deserve it. So I'll just call him Noah Syndergaard. Let's hear from him on why he's been so inconsistent this year.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm not too certain. I think I have the most confidence in my routine in between starts, getting really good work in, just having a tough time mentally putting it all together.
I mean, unbelievable. Against Detroit, your team has won four in a row. You're staring 500 in the face. You know what you've got coming up next week in the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks. It's a much-needed win. And that performance, that was a horrendous performance from Syndergaard last night. More from Noah on his frustration levels right now.
It's pretty high, just about as normal as anyone when it comes to just riding this roller coaster. But, you know, back to work tomorrow. It had been real nice to get five in a row. I'm going to take full responsibility on this loss tonight because I just simply didn't get the job done. And offense really came alive. That was a lot of fun to watch and be witness to. Just, you know, we have an offense and a team that's just not going to go down easy. We're always going to have a fight in us.
Take full responsibility. It's your responsibility. Of course you should take full responsibility. You were awful. The game was lost because you allowed six runs. Now, the bullpen didn't help either, but I'm not going to sit here and beat up Drew Gagneau. Tyler Bachelor. I mean, Familia, as bad as he is, and he wasn't good last night, at least got out of the inning. Hector Santiago. I mean, right now, with Lugo out, you rely even more on the starting pitcher. And the offense was good last night. I mean, look at what they did. Adeiny Echevarria is hitting home runs for you. You're down 4-0, and your team comes all the way back and gives you a lead. So they gave you the second chance, and then you spit it away again. So here's what Syndergaard has done lately. Yesterday's disaster of a performance. He was good his two starts prior to that. Before that one, remember in San Diego, he was terrible again. Six innings, five runs. Gave you a virtuoso performance against Cincinnati. Remember that day game where I think he hit the home run and they won 1-0? Before that, Milwaukee, 10 hits, 5 runs. St. Louis, 8 hits, 6 runs. Philadelphia, 9 hits, 5 runs. Minnesota, that's when the Twins came to town and beat up on the Mets, 4 runs in 7 innings. He settled down late. If the Mets have any chance of competing even remotely this year, DeGrom, Syndergaard, Wheeler, and Mats have to turn it around. There's no two ways about it. But watching last night's performance, do you understand how many games consecutively the Tigers had lost going into that game? Do you know how bad this team actually is? 9 in a row. And you let them come into town. And before people have even parked and are sitting at Citi Field, you're down 4-0. That performance last night from Syndergaard was nothing shy of an abomination. 800-919-3776. And I was all excited about it. Well, you know what? Let's make it five in a row. I don't love Vargas, but even today you have the pitching matchup advantage when Detroit starts no one you've ever heard of. Maybe you sweep the series. You know what? And I understand I'm realistic. Go 3-4 on that road trip. But if I sweep this series, which is now done, I can go 3-4 and still be above 500. So now what has to happen is you got to win these next two, get to 500, go 3-4, come back from the West Coast trip one game under. Is that asking too much? Maybe it is with this team. Because 4 in L.A. is a daunting, daunting task. We'll get into the NBA. We'll get into the Yankees, who rained out yesterday. They have two today. Day-night doubleheader out in Kansas City.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.
Ty, look up the ages of these guys. Rajai Davis, I think, is probably closer to 40 than 30. Carlos Gomez, same thing applies to him. Irvin Santana, who they go ahead and they sign. And they sign someone else who's 100. Oh, and Matt Kemp. But what they do is they wrap it up in this, you've heard of this guy. Right? You know who he is. So looky here. We're giving you a guy that you're familiar with, and he's going to be good. The problem is, Irvin Santana is terrible. And Rajai Davis is, let's be honest, never been all that good. I mean, he's always been able to run, but he has no arm, and he showed that last night right away. And again, you need him. You have ages for me on these four guys?
Rajai Davis is 38.
38, yeah.
Irvin Santana is 36.
36, nice.
Who else did you say?
Carlos Gomez.
Carlos Gomez is 33.
Oh, so he's young. And Matt Kemp.
Matt Kemp, he is 34.
34.
I had to do what you do during Stump Rothenberg. I had to hit the Google.
See, you don't believe that. And how dare you?
Sometimes
it's so
it takes
easy
me
to take
time.
That way.
You're able to buy time more efficiently because you're thinking it through and you're pretending like you're actually thinking.
All right, then we won't do the segment.
You're typing.
Then we won't do it.
All right. That's
fine.
Let's just nix the segment then.
Okay. I do it for the people.
All right.
People love that segment.
They do love the segment.
So last week when a guy asked me a question, I answered it before he was done asking it. Was that just incredible Googling skills, or how did that work?
I think you actually knew. Well, here's the thing, Dave. There are some questions you know the answer to. Like, you're not just 100% devoid of the ability to answer questions.
So if you were on the stand and the prosecutor said to you, Mr. Butler, do you firmly believe that Rothenberg cheats at Stump Rothenberg? Your answer would be?
Yes, a resounding yes, without hesitation.
Really?
Here's the thing. Here's what I would do.
No, I'm done with you. That's fine. You know what? Mish, you and me. Forget about Ty. Forget about this friendship that he says that he and I have. It's non-existent. Mish, it's you and me.
I'm down with that.
Yeah.
How easy does that come for me?
Ty, I don't.
He's been waiting.
I'm not interested. I mean, you are in my inner circle. And you think I'm cheating?
Before the judge is done answering the question, I'm giving a resounding yes. That's Stump Rothenberg style.
Mm-hmm. Bad guy. Let's go to James in Spring Valley. Good guy. James, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
Dave, I believe you. You would never cheat.
Thank you, James.
Your genius is outstanding. So I got to
see, this is a man that understands how Stump Rothenberg works efficiently. Go ahead, James.
Bad job, Ty. Bad job. Now, as far as your Mets, and I do feel bad for the Mets. You know I'm not a Mets fan. You know, I'm a Yankee fan. I'm not here to pile and, you know, make fun of you. I'm actually am curious because you guys swept, you know, you swept the Nationals and the Mets coming in Friday. You're feeling good. You know, you're home and you're relaxing. And before you even sit down, Noah Syndergaard decides to soil himself. So my question to ask you, Mr. Rothenberg, is, if the Mets continue this mediocre return, and not just for this season, going forward, like, what's the answer? Because you're hiring a novice GM, Brody Van Wagenen. I don't think he has any idea what he's doing. Your head coach is pretty much could be done, and I don't get it. I feel really
bad. Yeah, James,
bad.
I don't have the answer for you because I wouldn't have gone in this route in the first place, to be honest with you. Like, when the Mets were interviewing GMs, they went after the guy that told them what they wanted to hear. You can win right now. But for me, the answer is you probably can't win right now. So I don't know. I think that they will try to go all in over and over and over.
And then when you go all in, it's going to be too late. And then you should have hired that guy. You should have hired Bloom, who does a good job with Tampa.
Tampa operates the thing is, and thanks for the call, James, Tampa operates brilliantly. And they do it on a fraction of the budget that the Mets do it on. That's what you want to emulate. Hey, wait a second. There's a team that does what we do, but we actually have more money than they have, so we could do what they do, but with a bigger advantage? Yeah, let me buy into that. Not, hey, your team is great, go win. and this press conference from Brody. Now, he took it all on himself. We defend Mickey. Mickey is sensational. He's going nowhere. We're completely tied into him. But do you feel confident about the Mets right now? Even when they're winning these games against the Nationals, it's like, yeah, I mean, you're winning and you're closing in on 500, but you're not a very good baseball team. And you continue to make mistake after mistake. And, I mean, whoever makes a decision on Thursday, I don't know if it's some guy sitting there, you know, right outside the dugout or somebody upstairs that's calling down or whatever it might be. But you have this whole conversation about how Edwin Diaz is now, he's available for four out saves. And he can go into the second inning during his saves. And you hear that on Wednesday. So on Thursday, you're in a position where Gesellman, and Gary Cohn must have told us 57 times, Gesellman, 13 consecutive shutout innings. Well, he starts to get hit around a little bit. And now you're in a position where a 3-1 lead falls to 3-2. And now it's runners on second and third and two outs. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, all right, well, they've just told us that Edwin Diaz is available for the four-out save. That's the direction they're going to go in. And they leave Gesellman in. Parra base hit up the middle. You fall down 4-3, and I'm incensed about it. If they didn't come out the day before and tell you this about Edwin Diaz, then you know what? Okay, it is what it is. There's nowhere else to go. Gesellman is the best of the lot. I'll go with him. I'll ride or die with him. And there's nothing that can be done. But the Mets tell you on Wednesday, all right, guys, good news. Edwin Diaz, we've reevaluated this, and instead of the three outs, the one inning, he's going to be extended a little bit. They told you that the day before. And then the next day, where the situation is glaring that he needs to be brought in, they don't go to him. So I don't know if it's Mickey. I don't know if it's Brody. I don't know if there's some analytical guy that's making these decisions, but something is clearly broken. And then last night, Syndergaard. You know, every time the Mets take three steps forward, they take three steps back. And you realize after a while, you're exactly where you started. Danny, Long Island. Danny, you're on 98.7.
Good morning, Dave. I'm in the middle of my son's back-to-back doubleheaders and his 15-year-old team. That gives me more joy. They
nice.
Actually play a better brand of baseball than the Mets. Beautiful day to play, too. Listen, getting back to the Mets now. The problem is not the GM, and the problem is not the manager. Because if you stack this paper, most people thought back in April, you got 1-4 of those starters. They could compete with anybody if they performed. The lineup was okay. Alonso was overperformed. Everybody else has underperformed, and that's the problem. And if Cespedes didn't fall off a horse and he came back in July and provided something, well, then that lineup on paper, according to the back of the baseball card, Michael Kay's phrase, they would have had enough to have been a good team. But nobody is doing what they're supposed to be doing except for Alonso. Even DeGrom's had bad starts. Syndergaard, shut up. I've had enough of you. You're a 500 career pitcher. You throw 97 pitches in four innings. You can't, and you are what you are. And in Mats, I feel my elbow hurts. I got to sit out a month. They're just all a bunch of underperformers. It's not the manager can't go to bat. The manager can't toe the mound. And I've had it with the
Danny. I don't disagree with you that a lot of the guys that you're counting on have underperformed, but you cannot have faith in the franchise as a whole.
No, they're like the Knicks and the Jets, and they always do things wrong. And
I mean, it starts at the top. Do you look at the? Let me ask you a question, Danny. Do you look at the Wilpons and say, "Now that's good ownership"?
No, horrible ownership.
All right, exactly, and that's where it starts from.
Yeah, right. Listen, I made an analogy earlier in the week with Michael. I go, if you watch the Preakness, there was a horse running without a jockey. That's the Mets. They're just wandering around the track. There's no aim. There's no leadership. Nobody's got a whip in their hand.
No, and thanks for the call, Danny, maybe the horse just runs his way to first place. Odds are he doesn't. Once every 10 or 12 years, he's going to run his way to first place with no jockey on board. But they're bad. I mean, look, I don't want to sit here and tell you they're a bad baseball team. They feel like a rudderless baseball team. And what I said earlier is true. Every time they take three steps forward, they take three steps back. It always happens with them. They're a broken baseball team. And last night made me so incensed because I know the next week is hard. So you gotta collect the nuts waiting for the winter, right? Knowing that next week is four games in LA and three games in Arizona, win these games against teams that are lousy. And you cannot convince me otherwise. Detroit is a lousy baseball team. And you went out last night and put up 8 runs and still lost. I mean, where is, and Detroit can't hit to save their lives. Let me bring up this Detroit lineup. I mean, when you hear this lineup from last night, you go, wait, Syndergaard got smacked around by this? All right, here's the Tigers lineup. Nick Goodrum led off last night. He's hitting .214 on the year. Christian Stewart. Is it Christian? Yes. Christian Stewart's hitting .208. He's in the second spot. Nick Castellanos hits third. He's good. Miguel Cabrera, we all know who he is. He's a shell of his former self, but he's still a professional hitter. Let me look and see his name. Ronnie Rodriguez. Ronnie Rodriguez bats fifth and plays shortstop. Followed in the order by John Hicks. Now, Josh Harrison, we know from his days in Pittsburgh, and on the year, Josh Harrison, .165. We talked about the home run from somebody named Jacoby Jones. He's next up. And then you get to the pitcher's spot, and he actually had a hit last night, and that's Gregory Soto. And thank God for him, because otherwise the Mets would have been run out of the building. This is what they threw at you last night. Soto, Reininger, Farmer, who allowed a run in an inning and actually got the win. Alcantara, Jimenez, into Shane Green. And that beat you 9-8. Welcome to New York Mets baseball. 800-919-3776. We will slowly make our way from Major League Baseball to a little NBA. If I told you right now, you have one series to win. I'm not talking about 5 years in the future. I'm talking right now. One series to win. You can have any player in the world leading your team. Where do you go? For me, right now, one series. Guy can do more than anyone else. I'm going Kawhi Leonard. 800-919-3776. He has completely outshined Giannis in this series. One series, have to win, NBA championship, everything on the line, one player you can start your team with. Where do you go?
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.
We've started with the Mets, and it was just a horrendous game last night. And listen, in baseball, it's hard to look at every single game and say, you know, look at this, wonderful, look at this, awful, I'm excited, I'm done. It's a grind, it's a long season. But knowing what you have next week and finding it hard to believe that of the next seven games starting on Monday, you're going to do better than 3-4, the thought process has to be, you know what, finish this week off well. You beat up on Washington because their bullpen was just that bad. And now you have three games against a team that might be worse than Washington. At least go 2-1, if not 3-0. And to have a pitching matchup that you had last night of Soto against Syndergaard and to lose that game, to me, is inexcusable. Jay, Long Island. Jay, you're on 98.7.
Hey, Dave, I got to talk. I mean, you Mets fans are delusional. You guys are actually delusional. And this is the reason why.
I'm going to let you go, Jay. Let me just see. So I have a Yankees fan calling me, telling me the appropriate way for the Mets fan to act, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, please, Jay, take the floor. It's yours.
Let me tell you why. You guys say the owners are not, don't want to win. You guys were in the World Series in 2015. You didn't win it. That's not the owner's fault.
Nobody's did you hear Mets fans complaining about 2015?
No, you're saying the owners don't want to win.
You think the Mets ownership group has done a great job with this organization? Do you think the ownership has done a good job running this organization?
Were you in the World Series?
Jake, do you understand what a question is? I ask a question, you answer it. Do you think the ownership group has done a good job running this organization?
I think they did a good job. This is why.
You think they've done a good job?
This is why.
So David Wright, they're collecting insurance money on him. Do they put it back into the organization? No. Yoenis Cespedes, you think they'll put that money back into the organization? No. Buster Olney said they're the laughing stock of Major League Baseball the other day on our show. Jeff Passan wrote a scathing article about them on ESPN.com this week. How do you look at this? You know what? You're delusional, Jay.
This is why. Did you Yankees fans, did you Mets fans ask for Bryce Harper? Did you ask for Bryce Harper?
Well, yeah, we would have loved Bryce Harper, of course.
Okay, did you ask for Manny Machado?
Yeah.
What are they doing right now?
I don't. I mean, honestly, Jay, and
you said you want them.
Jay, goodbye. I hope you have a safe, wonderful Memorial Day weekend, but you will not be talking to me anymore today. Because you're a Yankees fan in your ivory tower where, oh, we can bring in a Gio Urshela and he hits 390 and he's a better defensive player. I don't want to hear from you. I don't care about you. The Yankees are terrific. The Yankees are well run. How dare you come from one of the most functional franchises in all of the professional sports in the Yankees and sit here and comment on the Mets about how they're so well run and how they were lucky in 2015. They were fortunate in 2015. That you had Daniel Murphy get hotter than he's ever been at the exact right time. And I'm not saying they weren't a talented team. They were a talented team who got red hot at the right time. That doesn't mean that ownership is great. Bring me back to the World Series. Watch me not complain. But to have a Yankees fan, see, this is the problem. To have the Yankees fan call up and play this game, you worry about your team. You worry about your pitching. I don't need you to worry about my team and my pitching. Don in Jersey. Don, you're on 98.7.
How you doing, Dave? I'm a huge Mets fan.
Don, I was in such a better mood about 4 minutes ago, but I'd like to talk to you, so go ahead.
They always say a true New Yorker is a Mets fan. Anybody can be a Yankee fan, all these guys. You know, I work with a lot of guys. They all Yankee fans, but I'm a true Mets fan. When will we see the silver lining? When will it get better? When will Cespedes go? I need to get rid of Cespedes because this team is ridiculous right now. I'm so upset. I took my clients to the game last night, and we lost to Detroit. You know, it's ridiculous right now. I'm so upset. When will I be happy again?
I mean, Don, I got to be honest. I don't think it looks all that bright right now. I mean, I don't know what the future of the Mets holds for you. It's a bad situation right now because you're built around pitching, and you answer for me. Has DeGrom, Syndergaard, Wheeler, Mats, has that foursome been really good so far the first quarter of the way through the season?
No, they're not. They
no.
Haven't.
Do you expect it to get considerably better? It better. That's it, Don. If you're going to have any hope, and thanks for the phone call, and keep your head up and have a good weekend. If you're going to have any hope of this thing turning around and the Mets really competing August, September, it starts with the starting pitching. Because if you don't get A+, because look at the bullpen. I mean, if you get 7 innings of quality starting pitching, where am I going now? Do you trust Familia? Do you trust Bachelor? Do you trust Gagneau? No, you don't trust any of these guys. Do you trust? I mean, the only guy you trust in the bullpen right now is Edwin Diaz. Maybe Gesellman a little bit, maybe. But with Lugo out, and you know what also frustrates me? Is that Brody goes out, and the second a name that you recognize is available, he swoops him up. Carlos Gomez, Irvin Santana, Matt Kemp, Rajai Davis. The one that I actually wanted, why didn't you go get him? Why didn't you get Gio Gonzalez when he was available? Because you prefer Wilmer Font or Jason Vargas? That's the one guy that you actually wanted. And he didn't go after. EJ in Uniondale. EJ, you're on 98.7.
Dave, love your show. My wife and I are sitting here. We watched the Mets game last night, and as this is happening, right? And I know I know Brody pulls the strings. Mickey's got to go, man. How we go back up 6-5, I believe, then maybe 7-6. They let Noah go out there at 94 pitches to pitch to the next guy.
I think that was 6-5.
6-5. He gets the first out. I don't know how the manager doesn't tell him, listen, if the first guy that gets on base, you're out of there. They don't even have Bachelor up when the guy hits the single. And, of course, now we've got to go not only 7-6 or not only tie the game, we've got to go down by 2. I'm not a freak out. Mickey's got to go. It's Memorial Day weekend. Let's smile. Mickey's got to go. He's got to go. How do they not even have the pitcher ready? But when Noah's been pitching horrible the whole game, they don't even have him ready, Dave. What are we doing?
Yeah, look, I don't love Mickey either. I don't, and he frustrates me. There's not a great. I mean, you're talking about taking that Syndergaard to put in the Bachelor, who up until a couple weeks ago would have been a guy that you bring in a 5-run game either way. I mean, they're a disaster right now. And if the starting pitching is not good, and tonight you don't have good starting pitching, today, 4 o'clock, it's Jason Vargas. Now, he's going up against someone that you've never heard of, so that's promising. Who did we say Ty is pitching for the Tigers today in his 13 ERA? Do you remember?
I remember his name.
No, of course. Well, I mean, no.
His name.
That gentleman's name.
Ryan Carpenter.
Ryan Carpenter?
Yes. 13 ERA in 2 starts.
Yeah. But you match that with Jason Vargas. And then tomorrow they actually have a legitimate starting pitcher in Turnbull on the mound. So, again, I don't know. It's very frustrating because, again, every time you think you've turned the corner a little bit and you look at the weekend and you say, okay, 3 games, Tigers, maybe we'll sweep it, at least 2 out of 3. Already you're up against it after game 1.
And you've got Clayton Kershaw on Monday.
Yeah, but I got DeGrom going, right?
Yeah, but which DeGrom's going to show up?
See, why do you do this?
You
would love that. See, you're like that caller.
You know, here's the problem with you.
No, I'm done with you.
Here's
honestly,
the problem.
This is supposed to be a celebratory weekend.
The day that it was announced,
barbecue on the show today. But you have taken all the fun out.
Who are you to judge? The day that it was announced that James Paxton was going on the IL, I relayed the news to you during a break because it was going to be a topic for the show. And how did you react to it? You were celebrating it.
Oh, stop.
So am I supposed to feel sorry for you?
Stop it.
Come on.
I just stay in your lane. Your lane is the Yankees. Your lane is you're what's that road in Germany that you're the Autobahn. You're going 112. The wind is going through your hair. You have no worries.
The day that Mike Maccagnan, it was announced that he was fired, the first person texting me about it was who? Dave Rothenberg, rubbing it in my face. And you want me to feel sorry for you?
Oh, now let me bring people behind the curtain for a moment. When the Giants dealt Odell Beckham on my birthday, before it was even public, who was all over me?
I don't know. Who is
yeah,
the guy?
You don't know. Bad guy. Our verbal barbecue this morning, out the window.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.
Just want to talk about sports. Talk about the Mets and last night's loss and how Syndergaard was awful. And I don't need the Yankees fan to call and harp on it. And when I talk Yankees, I will matter-of-factly talk about this team and how great they've been and be honest about it. And that's the way you play. But for the Yankees fan to be bombarding the phone lines, analyzing the Mets, we don't need that. We go around the diamond, and today's Around the Diamond brought to you by Volvo of Glen Cove. And 800-919-3776. You know, it's a shame because I thought we would pop on the radio today and have a lot of positives to talk about with the Mets because they did have a good week. I mean, you talk about a team that is bipolar, is hot and cold. You go down to Miami, you are the laughing stock of baseball. You get beat up in Miami. You don't score runs in the last 2 games. Robinson Cano shows you that just, listen, this is not by accident that I don't run. I will show you over and over, I do not run. I don't know how many outs there are. Little dribbler in front of the plate. I'm not going to go. Then you come back from Miami. They hold a State of the Union address on, was it Monday? I guess it was. It's been a long week. Where they come out. You can't make it up, really. Where the first thing the GM says is, all right, Yoenis Cespedes, and what he said, which is not true, has broken both ankles. There's been an incident on the ranch. I mean, what's going on? Think about that. The GM has a State of the Union, and before he even addresses the manager, which is what everyone wants to hear about, he tells you that your probably best player in a ranch accident has broken ankles. Now, he's now out for the year, which comes as no surprise. And then before he even gets into anything else, you find out that Lugo has shoulder inflammation, and he's on the IL. And then he gets into the whole thing of Mickey's safe and he's not going anywhere. We're completely behind him and blah, 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 blah. And then you go out and see, I don't even know if you played really good baseball, but you found a way to win 4 games against Washington and we'll leave it at that. And then all of a sudden the Mets fan starts to say, okay, you know what? Maybe we're heading in the right direction. Even though we're all banged up, even though there's no Cano, we don't need to go through the list of injuries again and again and again, and McNeil, and we know, and Nimmo, and all these guys, and we're banged up. But, you know, we won four in a row. We're a game under 500, and now we got Detroit. Well, we may not be very good, but they stink. And there's no reason we can't win at least two or three, if not sweep Detroit. Well, that's now out the window, because one of your pitchers that you count on consistently, awful last night. And that's Around the Diamond today, brought to you by Volvo of Glen Cove, the number one dealer in the country. Visit their winning team at Volvo Cars Glen Cove and drive off with confidence and your brand new beautiful Volvo. And do that today. 800-919-3776. Let's get back to the phones. Laura in Connecticut. Laura, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good, Laura. How you doing?
Good. I just want to say I really appreciate your show. I love your enthusiasm, and I really enjoy listening to you. My point to you today is a little bit of a feel-good cheerleading for the Mets. Yeah, I know they're having troubles right now, but my daughter is a soldier in the U.S. Army, mm-hmm. and 2 years ago when she was in basic training, every letter I wrote to her included the Mets record. I wrote to her every day, and I would tell her the Mets won, the Mets lost, Noah Syndergaard did this, Jacob DeGrom did that, on and on. And so now that she is stationed closer to home, I was able to take her to the game on Wednesday night. We had a great time. We got to see an amazing bottom of the eighth inning. You know, it was a fabulous time. We really enjoyed everything. You just got to stick with it. You just got to stick with it. You can't let anybody else tell you. I'm a Jets fan, too. So I've dealt with it all my life, all my life. Got to hear about the Yankees, got to hear about the Giants. And you just got to let it roll off your shoulders. Is it frustrating? Yes, and that's our cross to bear. And let them go and, you know, have the fabulous lives that they want to have. And we'll work for what we get. We'll work for what we get. We'll suffer the losses. We'll take it on the chin. We'll pick ourselves back up again. Like you said a couple of months ago, right before the NFL draft, about how everything was going great with the Jets. And I think Canty said to you, you know they're going to break your heart. And you said, yes, they are. They're going to break my heart. They're going to take it, throw it on the floor. I'm going to pick it right back up and go on being a Jets fan and a I'm referring to the show that you guys do during the week.
Yeah,
and
we
a
are.
Mets fan as well.
Yep.
But so you keep going. You keep going. I know it's frustrating, but it's a tough mother's love that you got to have the positive attitude and keep going, and they'll come out of it.
Well, I don't know if that happens, but I do agree with you, Laura. That no matter what, come hell or high water, I will be a Mets, Giants, Rangers, Knicks fan. So that's not going anywhere.
Yep.
And listen, a very happy Memorial Day weekend to you, and certainly to your daughter, and love and admiration and respect for what she does for our country. So thank you.
Thank you so much. You have a great weekend.
Absolutely. Thank you, Laura. And just for a moment, you know, you think about what this weekend actually does mean and all who have sacrificed and in memory and for this great country. And we do appreciate 800-919-3776. But, you know, you look at the Mets fan. And you look at what it is to be a Mets fan. And again, and it's no fault of your own. I mean, you're blessed when you're a Yankees fan. I mean, what, Ty, in the last 20 years, what's the worst Yankees season that they've had? It hasn't been below 500, right?
No, they haven't had a season below 500, I believe, since Cash took over.
So, and I'm not, in all sincerity, I'm not, like, beating up on the Yankees, but would you say that the Yankees fan is a spoiled baseball fan?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You're so used to winning. When you get bounced in the division series last year,
you feel like it's a failed season.
Yeah, it's a failure.
Right.
Because the mantra is championship or bust.
Now, they put a lot of that pressure on themselves, and they also act accordingly.
Yeah.
I mean, the Yankees have certain expectations.
And you
that
love
was,
it.
That's been in within the franchise forever.
It's something you love.
Forever. It's great. But it frustrates me when the Yankees fan calls and comments on the Mets, not understanding what it's like to be a Mets fan.
But here's the problem, Dave. It's the same for you as a Giants fan now, what's transpired the last couple of seasons.
Listen, the Giants have been amazing. But to compare the Giants to the Yankees.
No. I'm not comparing them to the Yankees. I'm saying when you talk about the Jets and what they're going through coming from a Giants perspective, it can be construed the same way for Jets fans. You've seen your team win multiple championships,
yeah,
and here you come on your show every day, Monday through Friday, talking about, you know, the Giants and their struggles. Meanwhile, the Jets haven't won a title in 50 years.
I get it, but I'm not concerned about the Jets. Like, my life does not revolve around the Jets. Not that I won't speak about them or not interested in them or can't analyze what they're doing, but I'm focused on the Giants. The Giants are the sun and the moon in my football universe. And I'm not saying that the Jets shouldn't be for some people, but I'm not sitting here telling the Jets, all right, calm yourself down. It's not that bad. Just the opposite. I mean, what they did last week, I thought was ridiculous. And we all beat them up for it. And I still think they look ridiculous. And this nonsense this week with Adam Gase about, oh, you know, Lev and I have a great relationship. It looks great. We all know you didn't want him. Let's go to Gary, Long Island. Gary, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, that's actually a good point to put me. I legitimately love everything the Jets have been doing for the past couple months. Like, I was sitting, and when I found out Maccagnan got fired, I was at work. I almost screamed yes so hard I would have gotten in trouble.
So, but Gary, it's fine. Wanting Maccagnan gone, I understand. You didn't want him gone months ago, though? You wanted him to run the draft and free agency and then to fire him?
I did prefer him to be gone then, but I got a little angry at first after when that settled in. But then I thought about it. I did the research, and they said, typically with the GM, you fire them after the draft because in that short window from the end of the season to the draft, you have to then not only find a new GM, but they got to put together a whole scouting department.
It's not that short a window. If you would have hired a new GM when you hired Adam Gase, you would have been fine.
I just think that, like, even if it is not normal, it gets overinflated on how bad
Gary, you're all in 100% on a guy that has done nothing in this league, right?
He got Tannehill to the playoffs. To me, that's insane.
Okay. All right. This guy, the top of his resume, like the number one thing that Adam Gase can say that he has done is gotten Ryan Tannehill into the playoffs.
When we were looking for a new head coach, to me, I've only known defensive head coaches for the Jets, and it gets annoying. I've seen the quarterbacks fizzle. I really just wanted a young offensive quarterback guy, and he hit those boxes, so I was happy.
Okay. Listen, maybe it works out, Gary. It feels right now like this thing, and thanks for the call, is kind of broken, at least to me. Now, and you're right. And Adam Gase said this week, you're not going to care. If we get to the regular season and we're winning games, you're not going to care. And you know what the answer is? You're right. If you come out and you beat Buffalo and the next Monday night, Beckham and the Browns come to town and you beat them up and you beat New England and you're winning in Jacksonville, you're right. All the things that we have sat here and said over the last few weeks about Adam Gase, about the hire, about firing Maccagnan, goes right out the window. Right out the window. But do you really believe that that's the case? Do you think the Jets, with that schedule, start out 4-1? I mean, why would you make it public that the running back that you've just spent this much money on, you don't want? What good does that even do? Is he not good? Do you not look at him as a talented player? He's terrific. So did you pay him too much? Maybe. But you know what? That's what happens in free agency. Was it Olivier Vernon paid too much? Yeah. Janoris Jenkins? Yeah. Snacks Harrison? Yeah. That's what happens. That's the definition of free agency. If your team is so bereft of talent that you need to go out and sign guy after guy after guy, you're going to overspend. That is the nature of the business. You do not build a team in free agency. You build a team via the draft. And if you can't, like the Jets and the Giants have not been able to, then you overspend on free agents. So is Lev Bell worth $13 million a year? Probably not. Is Lev Bell a top, certainly 10 running back in the NFL and probably much better than that? Yeah. So you got that. And now you don't want it? C.J. Mosley, is he worth that money? Probably not. Is he terrific? Yeah. 800-919-3776. And that's what I don't understand. That's the definition of free agency. How many guys sign deals that you immediately, your first reaction is, boy, that's a favorable deal for the club? How many, with all the free agents out there, how many Brooke Lopez's are there where you're like, wait a minute, $3 million a year for a talent like that? That doesn't happen very often. More often than not, it's all right, he's great, and we paid for him. And that's exactly what the Jets did. They brought in a lot of talent, and they paid for it. And they should. And maybe it does work out. But to say that it looks like it's functional or well-oiled right now would be untrue. 800-919-3776. A lot going on. Ty, are we going to do Stump Rothenberg at 10:30? I feel very negative about it.
Yeah, we're going to do it. We're going to do it.
Maybe we just ban you from asking questions today?
If that's what you see fit in terms of the success of the segment, then sure.
No, I don't know that's what I see. I would like a little camaraderie.
You're just mad at me. You have a little bit of animosity.
I'm hurt. I'm more hurt than mad. I'd like a little camaraderie, and I feel like, look, Ray Dinan has our backs. Andrew Gunling has Kay's back. Don's back. I'm looking for that.
Well, Kay and not Kay, but Don and Andrew kind of went at it this week.
Well, but still, push comes to shove, and he's gonna take.
I've got your back.
I said, do you believe I cheat in Stump Rothenberg? And your answer was yes.
Yeah, I got to be honest.
Do you though? A good wingman maybe doesn't even always have to be honest. They got their guys back.
So here's what we're setting up for. I think the moment of truth will arrive in Stump Rothenberg. That's where we're going to hit our crescendo.
What does that mean?
Well, we've had a lot of animosity through the first hour and 15 minutes. I think we're really going to hit our stride.
Unwarranted. Like I was on a perfectly good mood when I walked in this morning.
Yeah.
Gave you a hug, big high five to me. She brought you guys breakfast. I mean, I was in a terrific mood.
Sometimes teammates have to clash, and then once you get to that next level, you're going to look at the moment of failure and you're going to say, we needed that to get to the next level.
So you think this will be our crescendo?
Yes.
Our moment of when Stump Rothenberg is clicking on all cylinders, we'll look back and say, remember at 9:42?
Absolutely.
When it went off the rails a little bit?
Yeah.
Now look at how
beautiful
things are.
That's going to be the moment that changed everything for us, my man.
All right.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com. He's pompous.
Listen, shut up and I'll tell you the story.
He's arrogant.
Do you think there's a lot of things out there that I wouldn't be good at?
And sometimes he's downright mean.
I know you know what that's like, to be that uncomfortable, pimply-faced, not very popular kid.
But now it's your chance to prove him wrong.
It's dumb.
Call 800-919-3776 with your question and let's stump Dave Rothenberg.
All right, well, you can try. I don't know the success rate that you'll have. It is a Memorial Day weekend edition of Stump Rothenberg, 800-919-3776. Ty, you've been very salty today, so I'm not going to give you the floor and let you start. Mish, would you like to start the Saturday edition of?
Sure.
All right, why don't you go ahead and ask me your 1974 television question.
Close. Which 80s movie was the highest grossing film of the decade?
Now, I'm thinking Top Gun, but I'm thinking here. I'm thinking here. Raiders of the Lost Ark, Ghostbusters, Back to the Future. I'll say Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It was actually E.T.
A very nice movie.
Yeah, it surpassed Star Wars to be the highest grossing film of all time.
Really? Mm-hmm. Empire Strikes Back has to be up there, no?
I think it's in the list, but E.T. is number one.
Okay, yeah, you got there you go. Spielberg involved, of course. That's good. All right, so good. And that's a nice question. A very nice question. All right, along we go. Ryan, Long Island. Ryan, you're on Stump Rothenberg.
Hey, Dave, what's going on today?
Not much, Ryan. You got a good question?
Dave, I have to follow Misha. I have an 80s question as well.
Okay.
80s movies. Are you familiar with the famous actor William Zabka?
William Zabka? No.
He played Johnny Lawrence in Karate Kid.
Okay, sure.
He was also in two other 80s comedies. I'll give you the other one, and you give me the third.
He was in Just One of the Guys.
Not a comedy.
No, yes, he was in Back to School.
Yes.
So I got it right.
Yeah, there's one more. That's the one I want you to name.
So he's in The Karate Kid. He's in Back to School. He's in Just One of the Guys. He's in European Vacation.
Bang, that's it.
There you go. Yeah, he was the boyfriend in European Vacation. Right. Just One of the Guys, very underrated movie, though. And I don't think he was even familiar with that. But there we go. All right, so now we're back on track. 800-919-3776. We're sitting here at 1-1. Let's go to Trey in Brooklyn. Trey, you're on Stump Rothenberg.
Dave, you are absolutely right. Just One of the Guys, one of the most underrated movies of the 80s.
Excellent, excellent movie.
Oh, my God, especially the end, Dave, and you know what I'm talking about.
Listen, when she chose herself to be a female. Yes, a very, very well done movie.
Family show, Dave. Disney family show.
I work with Rick. I can press the line a little bit on the weekend.
You're absolutely correct.
All right, Jay, what do you got today?
All right, first, right? Okay, here we go. Who was the first Major League Baseball Rookie of the Year, Dave?
First Major League Baseball Rookie of the Year?
Yes, sir.
I'm thinking it was named after Jackie Robinson. But I think it was Jackie Robinson, though, wasn't it?
Absolutely, Dave. You're so absolutely correct.
Yeah. Okay. So it was 1947 then, right?
1947-48. Damn you, Dave Robinson.
Sorry. This is what we do, Trey. All right. Let's go to now we're rolling along, Ty. Let's go to so, Ty, let me ask you this. You believe I've cheated so far today?
No, I think you are putting – you've been put to the pressure.
Uh-huh.
So you're trying to have some level of integrity.
Oh, so you think that because I was
– called out for it.
My feet were put to the fire that I'm the integrity level is raised.
Yep.
And you credit yourself with that?
I do.
Okay. Frank in the car. Frank, you're on Stump Rothenberg.
What's up, Dave?
What's up, Frank?
All right. Here's my question. Mm-hmm. So in Pulp Fiction, you're familiar.
Yep.
At the end of the movie, Uma Thurman – tells a joke from a canceled TV series that she was in. What was the name of the TV show?
That Uma Thurman was actually in?
In the show.
I'm not even going to waste the time. I don't know.
In your face. Hit the buzzer.
Oh.
Love you, Dave. So. Bye. Have a good weekend.
Frank. All right, we're 2-2. Have a good weekend, Frank. Great excitement in that. You think that goes on the resume, Ty? You know, Harvard Law School, and then below that, I stumped Rothenberg on 5.5.
Yes, it's a very popular segment. And look how emphatic he was.
Well, he
was so
very
proud
excited.
Of himself.
But now, and also, you know what was nice about that for me, from my standpoint, just to tap myself for a moment? I'm not going to waste time. I didn't know it. Let's just say we don't know and move on, right?
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, we don't need to waste time.
Improving the pace of play.
That's right, pace of play. That's the 30-second clock out there. John in Queens. John, you're up on Stump Rothenberg.
Hello, Dave, and may you have a happy Memorial Day weekend.
Thank you, John. You too.
So speaking of pace of play, this is a golf question.
Oh, God.
In the history of the PGA Tour, only one player has won a 72-hole stroke play tournament with no bogeys. Who is it?
Oh, my God. This is going to be a guess. I'm gonna guess because he's been relevant lately, and I'm sure this is not right. It's probably like Ben Hogan or some old-time Lee Trevino, but I'm going to guess Brooks Koepka.
You should have stuck with Lee Trevino because it was him.
Really?
1974, Greater New Orleans Open.
When you say the answer, then you don't go in that direction, but I figured. All right, let's go to Dan in Florida. Dan, you're on Stump Rothenberg.
Hey, Dave, how are you?
Good, Dan.
Down here in Florida, in between sets of the gym.
I can barely hear you, Dan.
Okay, who played in the first, let me take my headset off.
Oh, hold on a second. You take your time.
Played in the first intercollegiate game in the Ivy League. The first Ivy League intercollegiate football game.
First Ivy League game or Ivy League team was involved?
Yeah, the two teams that played in the first Ivy League football game.
I mean, I would think it's Harvard and Yale.
A bit of a trick question, but
it's a trick question. So it's two Ivy League teams, right?
Two Ivy League teams. They played in the first Ivy League football game.
Is Brown involved?
No.
I'll say Harvard and Yale.
Nope.
But if you say it's a trick question, then that's not going to be the answer.
Well, it was Rutgers.
Wait, you just told me it's Ivy League.
Rutgers was Ivy League. Ivy League is a athletic conference, and Rutgers was in the Ivy League back when they played the first intercollegiate. It was also the first collegiate football game.
Yeah, it's in 1869. I know about the game, but the fact that you went Ivy League. Ty, we're going to have to check on that. Because I'm not 100% sure, Dan. That, and thanks for the call. That's actually correct. The Rutgers is in the Ivy League? Because I know the game. It's in 1869. Let's go to Dave in Jersey. Dave, you're on Stump Rothenberg.
Yeah, hi, Dave. How you doing?
All right.
Just show you how much the NFL has changed. In 1986, Dan Marino led the NFL with 44 touchdown passes.
Mm-hmm.
Who was second with 25?
All right, so let's think of the good teams. So 86. So the Giants, 86 season, or 87, 86 into 87. 85 into 86 or 86 into 87?
No, the 1986 season.
All right, so then you're talking about Schrader as the quarterback of the Redskins. So you got Kozar, you got Fouts, Sims, but Sims can't be second because Sims, I think, had 21 that year. Was it Ken O'Brien?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
And it is amazing. And that year, Marino threw for – he had one year where he threw for 5,084 yards, but I think he was shy of 5,000.
What's more impressive for you, when you get the caller's reaction to be that shocked at your genius, like, oh, my goodness,
right,
or when you're able to answer the question before they can even complete the entirety of the question?
I enjoy that one. When they're like, you know, who played and then and the answer's out, I enjoy that better.
Okay.
Where would you go? Which impresses you more?
I think it's the former, where they're shocked because they knew you had no chance of getting it
and
correct.
And then I get it.
And then you get it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's go to Ty. Did you ask your question?
No, I haven't.
Would you like to?
Sure.
Okay. Why don't you?
All right. So I might be giving it away a little bit because of the time of the season. But which NBA champion has the highest points average in the playoffs without ever winning the finals MVP? So it's a player who's obviously won a championship, but he has the highest point average in the playoffs without ever winning the finals MVP.
Give me this question one more time.
Which NBA champion?
Right, so this player won a title.
Yes.
Okay.
And he holds the record for the highest points average in the playoffs.
But never won MVP of the finals?
But has never won the finals MVP.
Yeah, I don't know. This is going to be a pure guess. I'm going to go. Kareem must have won the finals MVP.
Yes,
Bird obviously has.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say Kevin McHale.
That is incorrect, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And what should have given it away is when I said the time of the year, it's Steph Curry. 26.3 points per game in his playoff career. Never won finals MVP.
But Andre Iguodala has.
He has. And it was wrong.
All right, let's go to, that's a nice question. Let's go to Chris in Rockaway. Chris, you're on Stump Rothenberg.
Hey, next Saturday is the Champions League final with over 400 million.
I don't know. Ask the question, but I already know I don't know.
Just what two teams are playing next Saturday in the biggest game in the world?
I mean, Champions League is what? That's European?
Yeah, it's the two best champions. Best clubs in Europe.
Is this where we had the collapse where like Barcelona lost to somebody recently?
Yeah, they lost to Liverpool.
Yeah, so I knew they lost to Liverpool, and I will go. I will say, boy, I have no idea. I'm going to go Real Madrid and Liverpool.
Sorry, it's Liverpool and Tottenham. Like Tottenham are like the Mets, Jets, Islanders.
Now I can tell you this: the Tottenham nickname is the Hot Spurs, right?
Exactly. Tottenham
But I did not know. All right, we got to end on a high note, Ty, because I don't want people to be saddened heading into Memorial Day weekend. Let's go, Dave in the car. Dave, you're on Stump Rothenberg.
Dave, how you doing today?
Good. What's up?
So, in the movie The Sandlot, can you name who played shortstop?
Okay, so I'm thinking it might have been Squints. Sandlot.
I'll give you another try.
Hang on. I'm not. That's not my guess. I'm going around the infield. Yeah. Played shortstop.
Awesome. Good work.
Yeah. There you go. So Ty, let's see. So Timmy played first, I think. Yeah, played short.
Wait, before you continue, got to let you know something. This isn't going to help the performance today, but sure.
We're about 500,
okay,
which is fine.
But sure, go ahead.
Smalls, and we know, played left. Benny played center. Who else do we know? Ham was the catcher. Squints, I think, played right. And that's all I know. I think that's about it. So overall, I mean, we were fine. We were about 500 and Stump Rothenberg, right?
Yeah.
All right.
We were less than Stump. I'm disappointed. I expect more out of you.
Oh, stop it.
Come on.
Come on. The Lee Trevino question was nearly impossible.
Dave, if I'm going to sit here and praise you when you go 9-1, I've got to criticize you when you go 5-5.
I think it's unfounded. So okay, I'm going to ask you again. Court of law, you're brought up, hand on the Bible, Ty D. Butler, Newhouse School, the whole nine yards, right? Do you believe that Rothenberg cheated at Stump Rothenberg today?
You did not cheat today, but that can also be indicative of your performance.
500 is pretty good.
It's pretty good, but it's not 9-1. It's not the Dave Rothenberg I'm used to.
I've done, just because I didn't go 9-1 doesn't mean I was a failure.
Listen,
today,
my man, when you set the standard, when you set that bar at a high level, it opens you up to more scrutiny and more criticism.
Holiday weekend, bring me back up, and we do that with the one and only RJ Bell, live from Las Vegas. Good morning, RJ Bell.
You know, Dave, you make an interesting point. Holiday weekend, but somehow I'm working. And I got to be honest, it was unexpected. I know you teased it. This could be a great show or a horrible show for me.
Because
no, sleep.
I mean, let's bring people behind the curtain. You're at the tail end of a bender, really.
Well, a poker bender.
Yeah. You know. Okay.
But what I do is have sips. Or I wouldn't say sips, but I have a beer in front of me because that makes the recreational players think, oh, he's not taking it that seriously. Look, he's got a beer. But, you know, so you drink maybe, one every 2 hours.
So you're nursing it along. So, all right, this is the question everybody wants to know. How did you do?
You know, let me think.
You know exactly how you did.
No, I'm thinking about my buy-in for a second. So I was only playing 2-5, which these days that's standard for me. I mean, I used to play 5-10, so it's no limit. So 2-5, the buy-in's about $500. And with 5-10, it's about 1,000. So I used to, you know, the games have just gotten so tough. But now that I think about my buy-in, I up about 400. So,
all right, so you had a very successful night.
Yeah. You know, I do it for fun these days, but, you know, one of my great joys is I play at the Bellagio almost always, and they have the best buffet, I think, in the world. So even if I'm just, let's say when you finally make it to Vegas, I'll say, hey, Dave, let's meet at the Bellagio at 7, right? And I'll go down there at 5:30, play for an hour 15, and if I can win enough to pay for our buffets, I feel so happy. It's like, oh, I got to play. I'm eating for free. I'm at the Bellagio. Yeah, simple joys.
I had this brilliant way of just nominally beating Vegas years ago. And I was able to put it into practice a couple times. Now, it's not huge, but all I wanted, because I was out in Vegas and I just wanted to have like spending money for the day. So I sit down at the blackjack table and I say, I'm going to bet $100 on one hand.
Oh, no. And then you double it?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Genius
if you want to go broke.
No, because the odds of not winning one in like 8 hands are minuscule.
Yeah, but when it happens, it's called catastrophe.
Then it's not so genius.
Actually, there's a term for this, and, you know, I read it, but I've never heard it pronounced. It's either Martindale or Martingale, but you can look it up on Google, any variation of that. And it is considered, and I can't tell if you're teasing. I hope you are.
I'm not.
It is, Dave, it is considered one of the squarest possible things.
Well, that's fine. All I know is I went out to Vegas, and I was there for 4 days, and each morning I would start with the Martindale method, and I sit down, win a hand or lose it, and then double it to 200. And then eventually, if I went at the 4 or 800, I eventually won in the first 4 or 5 hands, $100 spending money for the day.
That's like someone that snatches purses once a day and they haven't got caught for 4 days and are bragging about how they don't have to work now. What would you say to that purse snatcher?
The purse? Well, that's illegal.
All right, so forget the legal. Listen. You're like, I'm sure you've got like a Nietzschean perspective on this, where you transcend the normal rules of society, right? If you felt like something was not unethical, but it was illegal, would it start? Like, I don't know if you ever were a weed smoker or whatever, but I'm guessing legalities didn't slow you down.
That would probably be accurate, yes.
Okay, so why would this be?
Purse snatching, really, it crosses my line. That crosses well over.
And obviously, I feel the same, but
I mean, I'm not going to run up to some old woman and take her purse and think that's the equivalent of betting on a baseball.
But it is in the following way, is that inevitably you're going to get caught and there's going to be a huge consequence. In just the same likelihood, which is certainty, you're going to lose enough hands in a row that you go broke. And there you go. And here's the adage, and we'll move on. No series of bets that have a negative expectation can have a positive expectation. So each of your blackjack bets individually are negative, and thus no betting approach, no ordering of the hand, nothing you can do will make that positive.
All right. Well, I mean, you're certainly the guy that spends his life doing this, but for those 4 days in Vegas, I was $100 richer each and every morning.
And again, you know what I'm going to do is when we do meet at the Bellagio, I'm going to point at a chandelier and say, guys like you paid for that.
All right, and this is why I don't bet anymore. 800-919-3776. So RJ Bell's a little cranky, a little tired. He's at the end of a poker bender and said, are we doing the show? I said, yeah, of course we're doing it. And he said, then I'm all in. Let's start all in on this NBA series in the East because it has been a terrific series. And what I think we've seen is I don't want to say changing in the guard, but we all thought that Giannis was the best player in the NBA. And 5 games into that series, he's not the best player in that series right now.
Okay, first off, cranky. I'm sitting here sharing, you know, there's a great line in Rounders that says, it's John Turturro says, Mike, I'm giving you the playbook. It took me a lifetime to put together based on the beats that I took. Most of the lessons I've learned have been from, you know, painful experience.
So you also experienced the method of which I succeeded with.
No, that failure
at some point?
That was too obviously wrong. But there's been some it took experience for me to figure out.
All right, so let's look at this Eastern Conference series. I mean, to me, and again, I'm not getting involved in it, but I look at this game. Toronto's been the better team the last 3 games. They're home. They're looking to close it out. They're giving, what do you have, 2.5 as the number in this game tonight?
Yeah, more towards 2. So let's establish something right off the bat. Is the betting markets consider Milwaukee to be clearly the better team?
Right.
Today. So the question is, if you're looking at it going, oh, Toronto's better, I get that's the basis of a bet, is disagreeing with the market. Right, if you always agree, how do you bet, right? You know, last should be 2. It's 2. Okay, well, I'm not betting. So to me, if you so disagree with the market, you've got to tell me or tell yourself, for the listeners out there, or your buddies you might handicap with, why is the market wrong? So I'll ask you, Dave.
I mean, for me, I think Toronto has shown that they're the better team right now.
No, I understand that's your opinion.
Right.
The Vegas market says, oh, no, Dave, you're wrong. And let's be honest, the last losing month Nevada has had a sports betting was 2013, July. So we don't lose out here, or the bookies don't lose often. So if you're going to disagree with the market, you've got to tell me why. So I'll give you a good example. I made one of my biggest bets, and by the way, Van, our caloric intake number 2 game of the year.
No, the Cantor game, right?
How easy was that?
Oh, it was cake. I mean, he didn't play a lot.
Oh, he played like 9 minutes that game, and we were under 10.5. Okay.
And what did he wind up with?
I think 2 or 3 points. I mean, if he had made every shot, we still would have won. I mean, he didn't even play enough.
I like that you call it the caloric intake.
Yeah. Bet. Well, you know, you can't always have a game of the year. So you can have, it's kind of a joke on the old time guys that used to have the Big East, you know, April, or I guess not April, February game of the year. It's like, wait a minute, you're going to go with one conference, 1 month, and still go game of the year. So that's what the touts used to do back in the day. But one of my biggest bets on the sides this entire playoff, any team, was Toronto game four. Now, here's why. The line in game three, which was a must win, they were down 0-2, right? Was 2.5. Toronto favored at home. Now, once again, home court's worth about 4. So that was saying Milwaukee's a little bit better, but boy, there's so much motivation for Toronto because it is a must win. They win that game. But everyone watched it Sunday night and they said, geez, it seemed like that Milwaukee could have won that 10 different ways. Toronto got lucky. Game four, also in Toronto, same teams, obviously, no injuries. You would think, okay, maybe it goes from Toronto 2.5 to 1.5. Because, yeah, Toronto's still motivated because if they lose, they're down 3-1. But not that fevered intensity. And Milwaukee has a good history off a loss, right? We've all heard that.
Yep.
The line was Milwaukee favored by 3.
In game 4?
In game 4.
Wow.
So to me, it was the whole market play. And if you would have said, RJ, why is this such a big pick? I would say, listen, what is different between game 3 and 4? And Toronto won that game. I get it.
Handily.
Yeah. Well, no, remember, they won game 4 handily, but I'm talking about game 3.
Right, okay.
Where, you know, they obviously didn't look great that game, Toronto, but they still won, right? So to me, I'm asking you now, what is it? So you clearly think that Toronto's the better team.
Well, I also, and again, I'm not taking anything away from the fact he's going to be MVP and he's had an amazing season, but I think they have found a way to really slow down and, I don't want to say neutralize, but certainly hinder Giannis.
I think you're making a really good point there. So me and Fezzik's been, let's be honest, at each other's throat this week because we've just so disagreed about this. And I can't lie. I tend to get worked up sometimes, right? When I'm really,
and that's what, like, we appreciate.
Because he's my guy, right? I mean, I'm putting a lot of chips in the table with, you know, and obviously the only two-time Super Contest champion. It's like, it's a good bet. But when I disagree with him, it bothers me, right? Because part of me's thinking, you know, I'm pretty good at this, but, you know, in the NBA, he, you know, NFL, we might be close, but he's a lot better in the NBA than me. But then he was saying things that didn't make sense, so it was pretty adamant. So let me play devil's advocate the same way I did with him.
Okay. So he agrees with me or you agree with me?
He's like Toronto more than Milwaukee, let's say. But then he liked Milwaukee more in game 5 because he thought that Kawhi might be hindered by an injury, though to me it was like he only looked shook up like for 10 seconds. So, you know, he played well the rest of the game. But you make a great point. So let's establish that quickly. Is starting in game 3, Kawhi guarded Giannis. Now, one of the ESPN guys put out, and I apologize for not remembering who, an advanced stat that said there were 8 guys that had guarded Giannis this year more than 100 possessions. And if you look at the points per 100 possessions, Kawhi gave up 15 points per 100 possessions against Giannis. The next best player, defender, gave up 30.
Wow. So he was twice as good as number 2.
Yeah, Kawhi's been cutting in half the amount of offensive production from Giannis relative to the second best defender in the entire league. So if there's not an answer to this, I think that's a very valid point, which is, listen, the whole season Milwaukee was clearly better. And there's an amazing stat one of our guys found is Toronto won 45 games by double digits this year. They're the 8th team to ever do that.
All other 7 won the title, right?
Exactly.
Yep.
So on one hand, Milwaukee's had not only a number 1 seed type regular season, but they had a historically good regular season. Point differential also on top of that was, you know, historically good. And let me pose this. I know we probably have a commercial break, so maybe this is one to ponder for the audience. How many plays would it have taken for Milwaukee to win Game 5 that would have swung the other way? And I think it's hard to say more than a handful. And how different would this narrative be? It'd be like, yeah, Toronto got lucky with Game 3, but they won at home. But Milwaukee, you're not going to beat them at home. They came close, but they didn't in Game 5. You know, so it just seems like there's so many eggs put in the basket of Game 5, even though both these teams have played 90-plus games this year.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.